Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Amplify Horse Racing Podcast. A note before we start the show. This is a horse racing hangouts edition. The hangouts are Amplify's monthly virtual live stream that can be viewed in video form on our YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. The video version of this aired on January 30th, so please note that applications for the Godolphin Flying Start program, the subject of this episode, have since closed. But it's never too early to start planning for next year. I'd like to thank this season's sponsor of the Amplify Horse Racing Podcast, the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association, and the Florida Department of Agriculture. Each episode will bring you a Florida equine workforce or education fact brought to you by the FTBOA and the Florida Department of Ag. Today's fact, did you know that there are more than 23,000 people employed in the Florida thoroughbred industry statewide? Learn more at www.ftboa.com. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to season 4 of the Amplify Horse Racing Hangouts. I am your host, Anise Montpleasure. I'm the executive director of Amplify Horse Racing. If you're not familiar, you're new to Amplify, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization that promotes education and careers in the thoroughbred industry to youth and young adults, primarily in North America. So we basically want to serve as step one as an educational platform for people to get involved. So if they think, hey, horse racing, this is really cool. How can I pursue educational or working opportunities in this industry? We want them to come to Amplify. So again, also, if you're new to the horse racing hangouts, as I mentioned, this is season 4, so it's crazy. This was like one of our OG programs since the time that Amplify started. So this is our monthly virtual event that we host to reach people from all across the nation and share continuing education opportunities and create some chances for people to actually connect firsthand with industry professionals. So you will notice that this season is a little bit different from past seasons. Every horse racing hangout season has a theme. And as you see here, the theme of this season is making tracks. So we're all about career progression and opportunities for you to actually gain knowledge that you can apply to building your career or getting started in your career in the industry. So last year or in past years, we always hosted these in the evening. We're now going to be hosting them around lunchtime. So hopefully you can tune in while you're eating lunch and be able to learn some cool, awesome stuff. Another thing that is different, in the past, we've always had a single professional or a panel of professionals come on and talk specifically about their career or their career field in the industry and give some steps as to how they got there. This year or this season, we're going to be sharing live workshops that you can tune into to actually learn about various subjects in the industry. So I want to walk you guys through a couple steps that you can take to get the most out of this series. First of all, I want you to have a pad of paper and a pencil handy because it's a workshop, I want you to get the most out of it that you can. So there are going to be different points along the way and things that you can follow along with that you're going to want to take note of and maybe apply in your own career or career and educational journey. Second, this is a really good time to ask questions. So if you're watching this on January 30th at 1 p.m. Eastern time, you're seeing it live. It is going to be recorded for later viewing. But the advantage of watching this live on whatever social media platform that you're on at this moment is that you're going to be able to send in questions and comments to our speakers. So this is a really great opportunity to be able to ask those questions that you have on your brain. We can actually bring them right up on screen. So I'll give you an example. If you send in a question, regardless of what platform you're watching in, just type in the comments and we will bring it on screen just like this. It'll show your profile, it'll show your question, and our presenters will be able to answer that live. Number 3, take note of the next episode. So this year, rather than announcing all of our episodes all at once, we're going to be announcing them 1 month in advance. So I'll share this again at the end of the episode, but I can already tell you that on February 28th, that is a Tuesday, our next episode subject is going to be a horse racing history lesson presented by the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. So make a note of that. That's going to be a really great thing, whether you are a beginning fan that is just learning about the sport, or I know that sometimes history goes over my head a little bit. I don't always grasp certain dates. So having an overview, even if you're already involved, or maybe you've been involved for 10 years and you want to tune in and take some notes about horse racing history. So again, February 28th, I'll remind you again at the end of the episode. Getting into our episode for today, we are a week out from the application deadline for the 2023 to 2025 intake of the Godolphin Flying Start program. Maybe you've heard of Godolphin Flying Start before, maybe you've never heard of it. So the Godolphin Flying Start program, which we'll talk more about as we go along, is a two-year international thoroughbred industry management course. So the program accepts 12 trainees each year from all across the world. And then during those 2 years that you're in the program, you travel to 5 different countries to build your knowledge on breeding and racing and business practices within the thoroughbred industry in each of those countries. So for today's episode, we're going to have 3 Godolphin Flying Start experts because they're all first-year Flying Start trainees. And I'll also say, I guess I'm kind of an expert because I'm a graduate. I actually graduated from the program in 2020. To come on and walk you step by step through the application. So today we're going to talk about the syllabus of the course and what you can expect during those 2 years of the program. And then we're going to go through each of the components of the application so that you know exactly what you're getting yourself into. So like I said, you have 1 week left to apply. Maybe you already started your application, you have a few last minute questions, or maybe you're just hearing about this program for the first time and you see that you meet these application requirements and you have a chance to apply. So right now is a really, really good time to tune in, lean into this information, take some notes, ask questions of our speakers, and then start your application as soon as you get done. So without further ado, I would like to bring our speakers on. We have Orla Nangle, Alex Sosville, and Ben Triandafilou. Ben, did I get the last name?
Yeah, you nailed it. Nailed it.
Yeah.
Very good.
I had them each send me voice messages of how to pronounce their last names because I hate butchering names. But yeah, welcome, guys. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So I know where you guys are, but tell the rest of the world where you guys are at the moment. Ben, I'll throw that to you.
Well, we're currently in Kentucky, well, Lexington, Kentucky, in America. I think we've been here just around a month. So just getting used to it all over here. Alex is actually from America, so he's kind of showing us all the ropes at the moment. So it's been pretty good.
Awesome. Awesome. Alex, how has it been being, you're the one American on this year's first year trainee course. How has it been showing them the U.S. industry?
It's been wonderful, Anise, and thank you for having us. It's nice to be back in Kentucky. It's a place I've done a couple different stints in my time in the racing industry, and just it was that cool feeling to be back, but even more so, it's been being able to showcase a bit of the area, a bit of the racing industry and everything to the group. And yeah, it's kind of fun for me. It's a rare opportunity. You kind of get that position to come to your home country with the group, and I like to think they've enjoyed it so far. They've got to do some pretty fun things so far.
That's awesome. And that's probably another thing we'll touch on along the way is that, all of you guys are from different countries. So every single trainee course is comprised of a lot of diversity, different trainees from various countries. So it's really cool when you actually get to have the other trainees in the country that you're from and be sort of a a team leader or a guide of sorts to help the others, you know, build their knowledge, because a lot of the countries are very different in their breeding and racing practices. So we'll probably touch a little bit on team leaders as well and some of the charity stuff as we go on. But I want to start, in your guys' words, and Orla, I'm going to have you take this question. What is the Godolphin Flying Start program?
Yeah, I suppose the simplest way to put it is it's a two-year management degree, a management course, sorry, where you're basically, you know, you're covering so many different facets of the industry. You're getting hands-on experience, both in the breeding side of the industry and also in the racing side. You're also getting the chance to study in different universities around the world. So we did a stint in UCD in Dublin, doing a veterinary module. And then over here at the minute, we're studying in UK. We're doing an equine nutrition module. We'll be doing a bit more study down in Australia. So it's a real balance of both, you know, gaining academic experience that ties into the thoroughbred industry, and then also being able to get out in the mornings and, you know, work on different yards. We've done stints on breeding farms, thoroughbred yards, you know, rehab yards as well. So it's kind of a really nice way to balance getting experience in both of those facets over 2 years and over five different countries.
That's a great explanation. And for somebody out there that doesn't know what UCD or UK is, UCD is University College Dublin, and then UK is the University of Kentucky. So as we go through the syllabus, we're going to show you guys out there the different university and coursework components that you would experience as you go through this program. But thank you, Orla. That was a really good explanation. And so, you know, a lot of the Flying Start trainees have very different backgrounds and experiences that they bring to the table before they even apply to the course. And we're going to talk about what experiences are required. But before we dive into that, I want to hear about each of your backgrounds and experiences prior to Godolphin Flying Start. So, Ben, I'll have you go ahead and start us off.
Yeah, I started off. Well, firstly, the degree-wise, I did sport journalism at La Trobe down in Melbourne. So I did that. That was a three-year course, but with the COVID situation, it extended to 4 years. But I ticked that off, and so that was one of the criteria that was needed to apply. And then I went in and did journalism. So I was writing for a local paper, just a variety of sports, but one of them pretty much every week was horse racing. So that was really enjoyable. But then I realized I sort of wanted to have an idea on what I was writing about. So I joined a stable in Mornington for a trainer, Pat Carey. And I was there for about maybe 18 months, just hands-on experience, going to the track and working at the farm. That's very good. And unfortunately, he lost a big owner and I was only casual. So I moved on and went to another trainer. And that was Jason Warren. I was there for another probably 18 months, and that was very good fun. Learned a lot more there as well, and then went into administration work with Racing Victoria, just organising their jump outs and trying to put their system together. So it's been a variety of jobs on the way, and then I saw this as a great opportunity to learn some more stuff, not only in the racing side of things, but also in breeding.
Alex, how about you?
So for me, it was really growing up. I mean, never really grew up around horses. I had a father who loved to take me to the track and hang out with his buddies and pretty much wager on anything that moved. And that's how it really started. And just getting into it, I mean, my background was mainly in an athletics background. I grew up in a basketball family, and my whole life was surrounded with that. And then when I wanted to get into racing, which was at the time just something I loved, but nothing I ever thought would be a career, I reached out to a few people and just wanted to see if it was possible. And people, I can't believe what they've helped me along the way. It gave me the inspiration to do certain things. And since then, it's been a mix of really developing hands-on experience, understanding pedigrees through different work, whether it was working for the management side of a company like the Breeders' Cup or working for a trainer. I worked for Todd Pletcher for a while, doing a few different programs. I am a Kimmy graduate, for those of you familiar with the Kentucky Equine Management Internship. I went to the University of Arizona, and it's just a combination of all those things that it just kind of leads you down paths that you would never really expect to be led down into something that is pretty amazing.
So why Godolphin Flying Start? What made you want to apply to the program?
So it's interesting. It was actually a friend of mine who suggested it to me. At the time, I had had a little bit of knowledge of it just from a couple people I knew who just said, this might be something that you should consider. And it was something I thought about and over time just developed, okay, if this is something I do want to do, which, I mean, when you get to read about it and learn about it and talk to people, it really does. It's an incredible experience, and saying that now on the course as well. But you kind of understand, all right, this is how I need to go about it. So I, for me, this is just, again, might be from my background in athletics. I wanted to know what skills I needed to gain, what I needed to do. And then it was just it was one idea of what I wanted to do that led me down to different places that ended up kind of putting me in that position where Godolphin Flying Start was an option. Because when I started in the racing industry, I really had, of the qualifications, probably not much to it. And over time, it just developed.
Yeah, that brings up a really good point, that for somebody out there who thinks, oh, you know, I don't have the qualifications or the skills to do this, we want to teach you about the experiences that you should seek out to be able to go through this program. And sometimes you might need to apply multiple times before you get accepted. If you apply, you know, ask for feedback on what you need to add to within your resume or within your experiences to be able to do the course and continue applying. It's not, you know, I don't want anybody out there to look at this and think, well, I don't have the experience, I can't do that, because you can totally do this. I'm going to throw it to Orla. What was your experience before the course?
Yeah, mine's quite similar to Alex in the sense that I didn't really grow up in the industry at all, but always somehow kind of had a love for the horses, rode a bit growing up, but again, never really considered it as a career path. Didn't really think there were careers in the industry until there was a friend of mine in the year above me in high school, and she went and studied equine business at college, which I'd, you know, again, didn't even know there were college degrees out there in the equine industry. So I went and did that for 3 years. Which was brilliant. It was a really good introduction to the industry for me, coming from pretty much a very basic level of knowledge. I graduated and I actually came out here for a year and a half to Kentucky. I worked for Coolmore America, which was amazing. That was kind of my first big stint in the industry, working on a stud farm. Kind of fell in love with the industry from there. I went home and I actually did the English National Stud course over Newmarket, which was brilliant. Another, you know, proper hub of the racing industry. There was sales going on when we were over there racing, so it was really good to get to know that town, and we've actually since gone back and spent a bit more time there on the course. I graduated from that and I basically continued on the stud farm route. I went to work for a stud farm down in Limerick in Ireland, really small stud farm, but again, I was just trying to build up my hands-on experience, because having not come from the industry, I was aware that I needed to catch up in that area. So I spent a season down there, worked the foaling season, worked the yearling sales, and then applied for the course. That was my next step. And I think because I'd kind of got the international experience coupled with kind of the educational side of things and the hands-on experience, it was a perfect way to kind of tee up my application to the course.
Yeah, that it's really cool hearing from all of you guys on just the variety of your backgrounds, because I heard, you know, journalism, experience in racing, experience in breeding, traveling abroad prior to the program. And, you know, there's no one single way to get to Godolphin Flying Start. You know, I would encourage people out there to seek out a well-rounded variety of experiences before you apply. You know, try to have experience in various aspects of the equine industry, or the thoroughbred industry, I should say. But, you know, I could say from my background, it was heavily in communications and media, but I still did, you know, pursue a yearling sales prep experience and some time at the racetrack before applying. So thank you guys very much for sharing all of those experiences. So I want to give people an overview of what the syllabus for the 2 years of the course looks like. And so to do that, Alex, I'm going to have you walk us through this first year. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen here with everyone out there. It might take a moment to appear. And so there we go. So all of this stuff that I'm sharing with everyone out there today, this is on the Godolphin Flying Start website. So if you go to godolphinflyingstart.com and have a scroll through the various tabs, you can read all the bios and backgrounds of all the first and second year current trainees. You can read about various alumni, and it does a great job of walking you through what the program entails. So I'm just going to slowly walk or scroll through this as Alex talks us through what year one of the program looks like. Take it away, Alex.
All right. So for one thing with a lot of, with each of the phases that you're going to see is you'll have some people with experience in that country and others that don't. Like, we all come from different backgrounds, as Anise said, and it's a very cool part of it. So part of each phase is there's a little bit of an introduction to the racing industry and to the breeding industry in each place. And you'll see that a bit and just through some of the things that are listed, but even our different, we'll have different lectures, different visits, things covering like the veterinary modules. We looked at pasture management. We go out in the fields when we were in Ireland and kind of looked at how they did that. We would visit racetracks and look at training centers. I mean, we did a variety of just different visits throughout each phase. And then as the screen says, we do have two actually certificate modules in the first year, one of which is our equine anatomy and physiology through the University College Dublin. So we did that with a few days at the actual campus and then a few at our classroom. We have classrooms in each place. In Ireland here, we have one as well. And then we're currently in the middle of our University of Kentucky equine nutrition course. So we are actually students at the University of Kentucky, and we go take that course as well. And there's just a combination for people that are racing focused, that love racing, and that's more their side. We visit different racetracks. We meet with staff, whether it's the people who run the racetrack, who manage the course. If it's a sales, if you're more sales oriented, or even if you're both, we go to different sales, whether it's shadowing agents, working for consigners. You kind of get a full overview of each aspect of it over the years. And from country to country, whether it's the UK, Ireland, or the US in the first year, you're going to get to see things done very differently in each place. So you'll be able to compare the similarities and other things that you're like, oh, I had no idea that they do it that way.
Oh, that's a great overview. And I also want to point out too, the externships, which becomes more of a thing your second year of the program. So along the way, in basically every country. So you have a US externship, you have one in Australia. You guys now have a shorter Dubai phase than I have. And then you also do a European externship. So that's kind of like an internship job experience, like simulating what the real world would be like and pursuing experiences in your interest areas of the program. So you guys will have your first externship later on during the US phase, which is really exciting. Those are my favorite parts of the course personally. So Ben, sorry, go ahead, Alex.
No, you're good.
Sorry. I'm going to throw it to Ben for sharing with us the syllabus of the second year of the course. I know that, you know, this is still a little ways off for you guys, so you haven't experienced as much of this firsthand as you will next year, but talk us through what the Australian and Dubai and Ireland phases are going to look like for year two.
Yeah, so basically, after America, we get into our second phase and we go to Australia, which kicks off in August. So we spend a lot of time in Sydney looking at, there's, you know, all the breeding farms down there. There's, you know, there's plenty to look at. So you do a lot of visits, but you also do a graduate certificate in management at Macquarie University. So you're still doing a lot of study as well when you're in Sydney. But you also get to go to different race courses and racing. So you get to go to Flemington for the Melbourne Cup Carnival. You get to watch the Everest up in Sydney. And then you also have the Magic Millions up in Queensland. And you're also there for the sales. So that'll be quite an incredible week that I'm looking forward to. And you're there. You also do an externship whilst you're down there. So that will be interesting. I guess got to look forward to what you might pick. You know, whether you've done training somewhere. So if you do training in America, you might change it up when you get to Australia, but I guess it's up to you to try and work out what variety you want to do. And then you also go to Dubai, which for us, I think it's 2 weeks, but it's it'll be different. It's a more saying looking at the culture, it's, you know, a different kind of culture they've got in Dubai, and also racing and how much different that is. And then we go to Ireland to finish it off. And you also do, I think that's more about the business plan that you have to put together and the entrepreneurship course that you finish off at the UCD. So that'll be interesting. And you also do an externship as well, as you were saying, in Ireland. So there's a lot to get through, I think, second year as well.
Yeah. No, it's so cool. Like, I really enjoyed the second year. I loved the Australian phase of the course, and it's such a cool opportunity to be able to work on this business plan as you go along. And I guess just a fun fact, Amplify, which is now a real thing, an actual nonprofit organization, was my business plan when I was on Flying Start. So it was really just in its infancy. And so those of you out there can actually see where you can take an idea from a concept, and through the skills that you gain on the course, you can develop it into a real, like, living, breathing, cool thing that is having an impact in the industry. So definitely my advice for you three is make sure you pick something for the business plan that you're really passionate about and that you have a great deal of interest for.
Yeah, good idea.
I'm curious to know from all of you guys, I want to share some photos, but if each of you would share so far, what has been your favorite part of the course and then what you're most looking forward to going forward. Orla, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few different moments that spring to mind, but I suppose my favorite was being in Newmarket for the Tattersall's December sales. I'd have done a bit of work in this.
Oh, I think we might have lost connection from Ben and Orla. Alex, are you still with us?
I am still with you, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. I'm guessing because Ben and Orla are streaming from the same place.
Yeah.
They might have both had a bit of an internet issue. So I'll have you take it away. What has been your favorite part of the course so far and what you're most looking forward to? Oh.
Well, it's nice. And as you alluded to at the beginning, it was a very exciting thing for me to bring the group here and come to the US and have them experience a lot of this, because it's something that I mean, you take for granted when you're from some places and you do, but for them to see America for the first time, and even to see some of the places that we've gone, it really is. It's something you see on TV, but to actually experience it live, to see people's faces even more when they experience things.
Yeah,
live,
yeah.
Makes it so worth it. And for me personally, as you know, I'm a big visitor of racetracks. That's been one of my passions before I was even in the industry, when I had no connection to the industry at all. My
Here
dad
we have
and I
you
would
visiting
take,
a racetrack. What track is this?
So that was the Saint-Cloud in France. So we had I had a little time before the Arc sale, so I decided just to walk out on the track and have a little leisure trip. I had about an hour in between.
That's really cool. So you were starting to talk about your experiences with your dad and visiting different tracks.
Yeah, and it was just something that when I had no connection to racing, and that was my connection. But I started visiting some tracks. So I visited Keeneland, and I visited tracks that were so small that they only had about 10 people in the stand. But doing that changed my perspective on the industry from a size point of view and how expansive it is. So when we are in this position in places like Ireland, in the UK, and places that I've never been, but I've watched racing for years now. And I mean, just jumping in the car and going to see Epsom and Ascot, mm-hmm. and places like the Curragh and Leopardstown. And I mean, and even smaller tracks, going to places like Dundalk and
yeah.
Windsor. And I mean, you get to see so much of it. You get to see the industry itself. That really surprised me. As much as you can learn from being here, there's so much more when you're actually on foot viewing it right in front of you.
Yeah, that is a really good point. We had Orla back there for a second. It looks like she's disappeared again, but no worries. It's such an amazing opportunity, and I'd encourage people to take advantage of when you're in any given country, you know, trying to travel and seek out other, you know, seeing the sites, seeing as many racetracks as you can. You know, the course has a lot of built-in visits to various racetracks and breeding farms and businesses within the industry, but even going above and beyond that, pursuing other travel and learning opportunities. So that is a really, really good point. And I look forward to hearing Orla and Ben's perspectives on their favorite parts of the course when they jump back in. But Alex, I'm going to have you kind of walk us through, let me see, we already talked through the course overview. So I'm going to have you walk us through the actual requirements for the course. So let me just bring up this page right here, which shares, give me one moment while I kind of readjust this page. So this is the applications page on the website, which basically explains the various requirements that you need, what an applicant should have in terms of experiences prior to the course, and then a bit of an overview of what that application process looks like, which we'll look more into as we continue on. So talk us through this as I scroll through this page here, Alex.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll kind of give just an overview of the things. And just what they look for a bit is people who are passionate about the racing industry, who want to make that their career. They want people that have had experience in the industry, at least some level of hands-on, or it depends, the backgrounds are so different, but they usually do look for a level of hands-on experience, which is something for me that I went on to have to develop myself. And one other thing that we're very big on just over the last few years discussing is there is a level of a college degree that you can have, but at the same time, you do not have to be a college graduate or have that degree to qualify. And those are all listed on the page. If you want more information, you can kind of look and see what those requirements are. And then just as far as the application itself, it shows it on the screen as well. It's your resume, your CV, transcripts, if you like, from different schools and stuff like that. The references are now where you have three references and it's just providing a phone. You don't have to have a written reference anymore. And other little things, your passports, which I will admit I should have gotten earlier because I hadn't traveled outside the country before applying and then had to like rush to get my passport.
That's funny.
And then, yeah. And then there's a 60-second video which will have a prompt question that you kind of get provided. And you pretty much just answer it the way you want to answer it. And you send it into them. And I want to make sure I didn't miss anything too crazy on that. And then as far as just any, for language wise, there's a proficiency, if English isn't your first language, if it is, then that's not anything you have to do. And I think that's about it for applications as far as submitting it. And the only thing I'll advise on that, if it comes down to it where it's late and you decide to do it, then you can just get it in. But if you have time, just kind of chip through it one day at a time and it gets pretty easy.
Yeah, that's a great point. Welcome back, Ben and Orla. We're just talking through the some of the application requirements that are on the website. I would definitely agree with you, Alex. I guess I was planning pretty far in advance that I wanted to apply for Godolphin Flying Start when I was at that stage in my life. So I started working on the application immediately upon it opening. I had other people on my course who applied the day before the application was due. So again, for anybody out there watching, there is still time. You still have a week to get your application in and pull a lot of these materials together, which is why we're talking about this and sharing with you these skills and the requirements that you would need, because there definitely is still plenty of time with 1 week for you to get that application in. Ben and Orla, I do want to go back to before we dive into really walking through the application. Orla, you got cut off when you were talking about, you know, what your favorite part has been of the course so far and then what you're most looking forward to.
Yeah, sorry, we had a very untimely power outage there.
You're good.
I was saying, I suppose my favorite part would probably have been the Sceptre sessions, which we got to see in December when we were in Tattersalls. There was kind of the first edition of that kind of sale took place. And we got to see some really high profile race mares, race fillies get sold for some just mind-boggling numbers. So that was really cool to be there for that evening. And it was a really cool atmosphere. And then also another kind of time that springs to mind is just being able to have gone over to see the Arc in Paris this or well last year now, I suppose, it was really, really cool. I'd never really been racing anywhere other than Ireland and America when I spent time over here. So to go over there was really cool.
Is this a picture of you guys all in France together?
Yeah, so we got when we went Chantilly? Over we were for like 2 days. Yeah, we got to go to Chantilly. We spent one night in Chantilly and we got to have a few tours around André Fabs, Gallops, and Francis Graffards as well. And then we got to go and see the Chantilly race course. So yeah, that was a really, really cool way to kick off ARC weekend. And then yeah, we went up to Paris for the big day. So it was a really cool weekend.
Ben, what's been your highlight so far?
I'd say going to all the trainers' yards. I've loved going to, especially in the UK. That was Stradivarius. He was cool to see at the English national start.
That's
so
awesome.
He was a phenomenal racer. So he was pretty good to finally meet. But going to some of the trainers like Sir Mark Prescott and Charlie Appleby and Roger Varian, they were just all so good with their time. And I don't know, it's cool seeing the differences and how they train and what they feed and how they handle stuff. It's quite incredible, the people that you meet and the opportunities that you get. So I found that probably my favorite part of the whole course so far. And I'm assuming it'll be the same here in America too. So looking forward to that. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Thank you guys for sharing. It's cool to have that perspective of, you know, I'd say it's a challenge unless you know somebody who's done the course to fully understand and grasp what all is involved, because there are so many different components to it. So this is such a great opportunity for people who do want to apply to the course to be able to, you know, hear from you guys directly. And in fact, we do have a question here from Rachel Wagley, who is one of our Amplify mentees in 2022. So, hey, Rachel. I take it she has to pop off early from this watching this stream. But what is the time frame that you're eligible to apply? And I take it she means from when the application opens to when it closes. Ben, do you happen to know that off the top of your head?
I'm assuming you can apply as in start applying whenever you're free to. So as soon as it opens, I'm not sure exactly what date it is, but you can always get in touch.
I want to say it opened in like December this year. I might be off base with that, but I do believe that it opened in December.
Perfect. And then they close next Monday, which is February 6th. So that's the end of the time.
And before then.
Then you have to wait until next year. Ben's your sound got a little wonky there for a second. It sounded very futuristic. So yeah, Rachel, you have another week to apply for this year. And then you would have to wait until the next intake or the following year. And so you can always take a look at the application now if somebody's not quite ready to apply at the moment, or if you, for whatever reason, can't get all of your application materials together. You can always take a look at, you know, what you need and then prepare all of that stuff for next year. Yeah. We have a question here from Josephina. Are you ever too old to apply for the Godolphin Flying Star program? Sounds like a silly question, but I feel like I have to build up on my CV and would potentially be applying when I'm 26 years old. I'll let you guys answer, but I'm going to say, Josephina, that you're definitely not too old at this point. There's no age limit to the course. I'm not sure what the oldest trainee was when they took part, but we had two 26-year-olds on my course who finished the program when they were 28. And I know that there have been older trainees than that. Do any of you guys have further insight on that?
I guess I'll take that one because I know who the oldest trainee is on the current course, and that's me. But I applied when I was 26. I was accepted when I was 26. So gotcha. I'm not exactly sure of the exact age that was been the oldest, but I want to say there's been people even older than that have been in their 30s that have applied and been on the course. And
Martin Larkin says that the oldest has been 31. That was that they were 31 when they started the course is what I'm assuming that was. So thank you, Martin, for sharing that insight.
But even so, there's not, I mean, again, there's probably an age gap of where you'd see most trainees are in that group from the 31 and down, but there is no actual age that says restriction on it. So, yeah. I mean, you just kind of do, you build your resume and put together what you have. You kind of go from there.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think for a lot of people, it comes down to the stage that they're at in their life. You know, at some point you might feel like you might've purchased a house, or you might feel like you've settled down, or some people feel like when they get to a certain stage in their job or career, they're not quite at that point any longer where they're okay with uprooting everything and traveling the world. So that's just another consideration to have as well. We have another question that popped into the chat, but I'm actually going to hold on to that for a moment and save some questions for the end. Josefina just commented again. So thank you so much, Josefina, for that question. I'm glad that you tuned in and were able to ask that and get that piece of insight. Wow, we are getting tons of questions here. This is awesome. But before we answer more questions, I am going to share my screen again, because I actually started going back through the application. It was funny. I still had my login information to SlideRoom, which is the digital application program that you use to submit your materials for the program. So maybe Orla, you can just kind of talk us through this as we go. And some of this might be stuff that we've already covered, but we'll go through each of the three components and then some of the additional materials that you have to submit with it.
Yeah, so I mean, as you can see there, the first part of the application is fairly basic. They're just looking for, you know, your general information. So there's nothing too strenuous there.
Let's see.
Yeah, very basic information. Yeah,
so this is all really the basic stuff. Passport right there. So everybody out there, there's your first step. Alex told you first, go get your passport as soon as you can. And let's see, let me get to this next page here.
Okay, yeah, so then it kind of gets, yeah, more into the kind of documentation that you need. So you obviously need an up-to-date CV, and they do suggest that that's not over 2 pages, just so it's easy and concise for them to get through. You've got to upload your exam transcripts from university and also from high school. So I had to get back in touch with my college for that. And then also a cover letter. So I know for our year, it was a pretty generic one. And it was basically just, you know, asking why you feel like you are suitable for the Flying Star. What do you think you're going to bring to the course? So it's very much personal. And I think that's kind of a key thing to focus on, is just getting your own kind of experience and your own character across in that letter. Then you've got obviously passport photos. You've got to have clean driver's license, because again, we get insured for, you know, cars, you know, in different countries across the world over the 2 years. And then, yeah, if English is your first language, that's grand. If not, I think there's like an additional test that you've got to pass just to show that you've got, you know, an adequate standard of English for particularly, say, the veterinary exams and, you know, stuff that we have to sit during the course. And then they do ask for 3 references, and they do say that one should be an academic reference and one should be an employer reference. So yeah, just make sure you've let those people know that you are using them, because they will reach out and contact them if you are successful in going to the next stage.
So this is a good one here. I almost dug up my old video, my old application video, and I just couldn't do it. It's so funny looking back on it, because you really do see how much you've grown and changed since the time of submitting it. But yeah, go ahead, Orla.
Yeah, we actually did the exact same earlier on today, and I couldn't watch it through. But yeah, I think the question that you're asked to answer in the video does change every year. I know for ours, it was something along the lines of what motivates you to have a career in the industry and what do you think you'll bring to the course? Again, pretty generic. And I guess this is the only, you know, footage that they have of you before you apply. You know, everything else is paper-based. So I think the important thing is try and get, again, your personality across through the camera, and just be quite relaxed in it. Don't be too forced and formal. They want to get a feel for you, basically. But again, you know, trying to balance that with also being professional and, you know, presenting yourself properly is probably the key.
Yeah, great, great insight there on, you know, really sharing your personality. I think for my video, we had to answer, I think there was multiple questions that we were actually posed, and then you had to answer it within a certain time period in addressing each of those questions. So it really does, as Orla mentioned, it changes slightly year by year. So even if you're thinking about applying next year, you know, don't think that you can go on and write down the question they asked this year and answer it exactly the same next year. But think about, you know, just think through the question that you're answering, reason it through really well. And as long as you're well-spoken, and as Orla said, you really show your personality, I think that's the best that you can do. Wow, we're getting so many questions. This is amazing. So I'm going to go to David O'Farrell here. Just looking through the application requirements, have you any tips for the 60-second video to camera and how to approach it? So we kind of already covered that, or Orla just spoke about that. So I'm actually going to skip through that one. David, I hope that answered your question. Helen has a question about, do you need experience in the breeding sector? So I'll hand that to one of you guys, since you would have, you know, been a little more recent than I and having gained your experience for the course.
Yeah, I'll take that. It's no, you don't need any experience in breeding. As long as you get the hands on for depending on your degree, but say if you have the top degree, I think it's level 8, you only need 1 to 3 years, and it doesn't have to be breeding. I didn't do any breeding myself. I did all racing. So yeah, hope that clears up that question.
Yeah, and you know, I think we've already kind of touched on, it's great to have some well-rounded experiences when you know, before you start the course, but you're going to be doing a little bit of everything when you do the program. So for me, I also, like you, Ben, I didn't have any breeding experience prior to doing the course. I had done yearling sales prep, but I had never touched a foal before. So that was a bit intimidating, but it's something you learn as you go. You know, it's just like identifying the areas where you don't have experience and being honest with that when you are in the course, and just being open about what you know and don't know. So that's a good question. Thank you, Helen. Hi, Cote. ¿Cómo estás? We met at Breeders' Cup this last year. Cote is in Chile. So regarding the hands-on experience requirement, what is one that is most valued by the team? So kind of a similar question. What would you guys say is something that you'd really recommend someone have? I know that's tough because it's so broad.
I'd say, again, yeah, kind of building on what Ben is saying, they're not specific in what they want in terms of the hands-on. They just want to see that you have, you know, if you haven't had the hands-on, that you have pushed yourself out of your comfort zone and you have tried to build on that. And I think most important thing coming from that hands-on experience is the impression that you made on, say, the person that you're working for, perhaps they're down as one of your references. So they just want to basically see your work ethic through that hands-on experience and, you know, basically show that you are ambitious and that you are trying to learn, you are putting yourself out there, you are asking questions. All of that kind of stuff is more important than the actual specific type of hands-on experience you've gained, I would say anyway, because they're going to find that out through your references, mm-hmm. if that's who you've put down.
And if you apply and you say don't get accepted in the first year, you can ask you know, for feedback on your application, and they will generally provide some feedback on where you need to gain more experience. I was accepted the first year that I applied, but even then, once I was accepted, I was given recommendations on areas that I could expand my experience in the summer prior to starting the course. So one of those things was to gain some experience handling yearlings. I was able to get a yearling sales prep internship that summer, and that did help in preparing me for the program. So you will be able to ask for some of that feedback and get recommendations. So this question from Achille, I hope that I'm pronouncing your name correctly, is the IELTS test compulsory? I'm thinking that this has to do with if English is your second language. I apologize if I'm off base with that. And if I remember correctly, if English is your second language, if you have a different language that is your first language, you do have to take the IELTS test. Again, apologies if I'm off base with this. And if Martin is still watching, he should definitely tune in. But I believe that you have to take that test if English is your second language. Let's see, we have Megan O'Leary. Do you need to have gained international experience before applying? Orla, you touched a little bit on international experience and how you found that helpful. Do you want to take this question?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a prerequisite. You don't have to, it isn't a box that needs to be ticked to get on the course. I know they do like to see that some people have got that international experience. I think it shows that you know, you're able to live abroad, you're able to, you know, deal with a new country, because you'll be doing this the whole way through the course. So it's good to have, you know, if it is an option that you can follow, I definitely recommend doing it. However, I know we've had some people on the course who haven't worked in the industry abroad. So it's definitely not, you know, it's definitely not needed for the application. But again, I'd recommend it 100% if you do have the opportunity to not turn it down.
Liam Cunningham asks, I cannot ride. Do I need to learn? Is Liam on the course with you guys?
Yes.
He is.
Okay. I was going to say, I'm recognizing some of these names. But hey, thank you guys for getting the conversation going, because this is great. This is exactly what we want, is to get people asking questions. And that actually brings up a good point. I do believe I have another screen here to share. Can you guys touch on the horsemanship competency criteria for the course?
Yeah, I can touch on that. So so the requirements have changed a little bit over the last couple of years. At one point there was a riding prompt that you had to submit to be able to apply and to have your interview. Now you can submit this very similar video, and the instructions are listed on there as well. And I believe they're very similar in that way. But what it also has done has offered up a few different options for people that maybe have never ridden before, or they have a ton of hands-on experience on the ground, but don't really ride out or anything like that. And it's just a basis to show that you're comfortable around a horse, that you know kind of different things to do. Again, we all have different experiences with what we've done. So one skill might be different from somebody else's, but at the same time, there's a few lists, whether it's tacking up and putting on the walker, or grooming a horse, or bringing it into a field with a blanket. There's a mix of little things that you just kind of do that it just kind of shows that you're capable around the horses, and then you're going to expand on those skills as you go.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, I remember when I applied, there was a riding requirement, and there is one individual in my course who hadn't really ridden beforehand, and he ended up being one of the best riders of all of us. And it's one of those skills that you learn, but you do spend some time at the British Racing School, which is a jockey school in Newmarket, so you will be riding there. So I mean, I'd even recommend that maybe somebody, if you don't ride, at least get some riding lessons before you start the course. I personally think that would be helpful, just considering that is, you know, a component of it.
So Anise, I'll just touch on that just for people. So it's actually shifted a little bit where the riding actually at the BRS is more of an optional thing to do.
Oh, so, thank you for sharing that, because that is updated.
Yeah, and it's something that for people there, I'm sure there are people in the past that have shied away from that kind of thing, saying, well, I don't have any interest in riding, I don't feel comfortable riding, this might not be for me. So as much as it probably, I know some trainees have spoken in the past about how they enjoyed their riding at the BRS and stuff, there's others that didn't. And I think it just opens up that opportunity. Like, if you want to do it, you have the capabilities, but you don't have to.
Let's see, we have another question from Akash. Dropped out of his bachelor's of arts and is having has international experience in racing as an exercise rider of about 6 years. So I would say in your case, Akash, to reach out to the course director, or I think there's actually a contact on the application page that you can reach out to, maybe prepare a resume or a CV and share some of your experience. Because depending on your experience levels, I think that the more experience you have, I think the less post-secondary education that is required But for those that maybe only have a year of work experience in the thoroughbred industry, you would need to have a minimum of a bachelor's degree. But again, I don't want to give you misinformation on that and tell you whether you are or are not eligible. So definitely reach out to the program directly to ask about your qualifications. But thank you for that question. Thank you so much. So many great questions. Muchas gracias a todos. We had a few people out there who speak Spanish. So again, all of my Central and South American, you know, Latinx friends, please consider applying for the course. I've talked to several through some of the Spanish stuff that I do that have been interested in applying. So definitely go for it or reach out to any of us with more questions. I think, you know, we're kind of coming down to the end of this, guys, and you've shared some really, really great information. As we were scanning through the program requirements earlier, I did see something about the psychometric tests and the interview structure. So let's just talk briefly about, you know, whether you, you know, if you submit your application and you are a successful applicant in getting to the next stage of the interview process, what that looks like when you get to that interview component and that time between once you've been, you know, you've had a successful application, you get to go on to the next component. Ben, why don't you help us with that?
Yep. So my interview process was different to a few others. Mine was over Zoom. So this year, I think it's America. Is it all over Zoom?
Gotcha.
So basically, if you make it through the first stage, the next stage is you go into a Zoom meeting with three, for me, it was three other people from Australia and New Zealand. And they pretty much, they give you a question and you need to try and work it out as a team, like a scenario and how you would handle the scenario. So that was interesting. And then they also pull you aside into your own individual meeting as well afterwards, so you can have a one-on-one chat with the course director and also yourself and just explain just pretty much as a normal chat very much. And then you have the psychometric test, which is pretty much just how you would answer, more like personality type, working out how you would handle a situation online. So it'd be like, if you had to do this, how would you handle it? Like ...
And it's like a lot of problem solving. Yeah. You know, there are some personality components, but they basically want to see how you approach solving different problems and then how you think, because ultimately they're trying to put together a group of 12 that's going to work together, you know, as a team and complement each other. Yeah. So I think that's kind of another component in how to think about it. Don't try to study for the psychometric test.
No.
I did. Did any of you guys study for the psychometric test?
No.
I did. And it was a waste of time. So anybody out there, just do it. Like, don't overthink it. But sorry, Ben, to cut you off.
You're fine. You're bang on with it. And I think there's one question that was a bit like Sudoku. So that was interesting.
I do remember that. Yes.
It might be a bit different. I think Walla and Alex, their interview process is a bit different because it wasn't over Zoom. So maybe Walla might want to touch on that maybe.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm probably the most relevant for guys over here is to know what the Zoom interview structure is, because like Ben said, I'm pretty sure it is over Zoom this year for America, but it was similar enough. I mean, the layout might be a bit different, but again, we had something with a group project where we were challenged on a certain situation. We had to present our ideas. We had a written test, which was basically a really broad general overview of kind of our, you know, industry knowledge. And I'd say that was probably the least important kind of step in the process, because, you know, there's a lot there that you learn over the duration of the course anyway. So they were kind of just, I'd say, trying to get a feel for what you know. And then we also had our individual interviews, which were actually a lot more relaxed than I thought they'd be. I kind of went in expecting to be absolutely grilled on everything in the industry, but they're basically just wanting to get to know you. They're much more interested in your journey in the industry, what you've learned, what your ambitions are. So yeah, I wouldn't say to get too stressed over it. But yeah, that's what is very similar to the Zoom.
Yeah, good overview of that, guys. I think that this has been a really great, you know, overview of what to expect throughout the program. You guys have shared some awesome personal experiences. Anybody who's tuned in for the whole thing will now kind of know what both years of the program entail and should definitely have the skills to, you know, take away from this presentation and go start on their own application. So this will actually be recorded and will be available on Amplify's Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. So if anybody wants to go back and watch this, if you missed chunks of it, please do go back and check it out. If somebody out there wants to get a hold of you guys and actually ask further questions, what would you recommend they do to reach you?
We've got emails, but Twitter's very easy. You can look us all up on Twitter and just send us a follow and we'll follow you back. And we're more than happy to answer pretty much any questions that you have. So, yeah. And
all the bios for both years of trainees are all on the website. So if you want to get an idea of the experiences that people bring to the table, there's even a variety of degrees. I didn't study anything equine prior to doing Flying Start. Some do, some don't. So go on and look through some of the trainees and see what experiences they have. And that will give a potential applicant a good idea of, you know, what they need to gain before they go ahead and apply for the course. You know, all the emails for you guys are online. I did notice that. Are your CVs up as well?
Yes, yeah, they are. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Do you guys have any last final words of advice to share before we send you off and leave you to the rest of your day to study for rope exams, the Racing Officials Accreditation Program?
I'd just say, I suppose, if you're on the fence, I would say definitely 100% send in the application. I know in a lot of years, you know, there's several people who have applied once or twice. They've got it the second time. They've got it the third time. There really isn't one clear-cut way to do it. So I'd say there's no harm in getting your name out there, and especially if you are unsure going forward, the application process will really kind of, you know, determine whether you really do think you want to do it or not, and it'll also give you some really helpful feedback in the future if you are, you know, a bit unsure as to where to go. So I'd say there's no harm in applying, and it's, even if it's just for an educational purpose, it's a really good practice to get into, you know, getting used to being interviewed, getting used to, you know, putting your CV together and cover letters. So it's not a waste of time in whichever way you look at it.
Yeah, that's a great point. Thank you very much, Orla. Alex and Ben, any final words?
Just the one thing that I'll say, and it's going to sound very simple, but it is advice that I got that really did change my perspective on things. And it's really just be yourself. I applied twice and had the interview twice, and I'll even admit, like, it was something that, like yourself and these, I had planned out from a long time. This is how I was going to do it. And my philosophy was, if it didn't work out, I was going to do everything I can and leave no stone unturned, at least to prepare. And getting to my first interview, there are nerves when you get in that situation and you don't feel like yourself. I'll admit I was kind of less confident in myself about what I had done, the preparation I'd done. And looking back on my first interview after a while, where at first you're upset, and everything, you start to see that, you know, I wasn't me. And I got that advice and I kind of looked at myself in that way. And when I went in my second interview, I felt very relaxed. I left it, I mean, just feeling like it was a really, really easy thing to go through. And obviously I can say that now being where I am, but the best way I can say it is, they want you, the person that you are. You've applied, you've done all the things that you've done to apply. Just go in there, relax, and be yourself, and it'll work out.
That's great advice. That's some very honest, like, vulnerable feedback as well. So thank you for sharing that, Alex. Ben, final words?
Final words, the course is 2 years traveling the world. Like, it's pretty incredible. Pretty much everything's paid for. Your learning along the way, you got no stress apart from maybe some of the tests when they come up, but it's incredible. Like, it's 2 years. It'd be, if you can meet the requirements, it'd be silly not to apply. Like, it's a pretty incredible course. It's even if you're say if you're going through uni too and you're starting to finish your degree, just try and, when you finish that, work out how you could work out what jobs you might want to do, say get hands-on experience, and then eventually apply for the course, because it's pretty incredible.
Well, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate the time that you've taken away from studying today to be able to share your advice and insight on the course. So hopefully people will follow up with you if they have further questions. And I'm just going to give some closing remarks. But for now, I'll bid you guys farewell and hopefully see you all around Lexington soon.
Perfect. Thanks very much.
Thanks, guys. Good. Thank you. Guys.
Thank you for having us.
Awesome. What a great episode. What a great season premiere of the Horse Racing Hangout. So hopefully this has given you a good taste of what this season will be about, really leaning into specific topics. To kind of finish this out, I do want to remind you that applications for the class of 2023 to 2025 of Godolphin Flying Start will close on Monday, February 6th. So if you feel inspired by this and you want to go forth and submit your application, you have another week to do so. Again, on this topic, on our Making Tracks theme for this season of Horse Racing Hangouts, remember that every month we will have a live workshop just like this. So different subjects that you can actually follow along with, take notes on, information that you can apply. So we're going to have various program directors will feature educational programs that will teach you an introductory class. We're going to have different lessons on various aspects of the industry. We're going to perhaps even have a book discussion. So some really cool stuff. Remember that our next episode is going to be Tuesday, February 28th, probably around lunchtime, a horse racing history lesson with the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. So what better way to get a great foundation of history on the U.S. thoroughbred industry than hearing it from an amazing source, the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame. If you want to get in touch with me, if you want to learn more about Amplify and some of our programs, such as our mentorship program, that's another application that is open at the moment and actually closes this Friday, February 3rd. You can reach out to me at info@amplifyhorseracing.org. So again, if you're one of those people that is just starting to get involved in the thoroughbred industry and you want to learn about a great way to create connections and maybe take your first few steps, do check into our mentorship program and actually being paired with an industry mentor. So until next time, I'm your host, Anise Montpleasure. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Amplify Horse Racing Hangout. Take care. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Amplify Horse Racing Podcast. Be sure to check out our website, www.amplifyhorseracing.org, and social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube for more of our content. If you have any podcast ideas, email us at info@amplifyhorseracing.org. We'll catch you next time.